Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You're trying.
Welcome to Properly Howard, a podcast that reviews classic films and other pulp fiction. Today we take a look at John Carpenter's Memoirs of an Invisible Man. Starring Chevy Chase as a person who becomes invisible, this movie is really just that. With me to discuss this, as always, is Dr. Anthony LaDon.
May he remain invisible.
If only.
Steve, we have a few new iTunes reviews.
Oh.
And as we promised in the past, we read these on this podcast. Let me read you one of these reviews. Properly underrated. Anything wrapped in bacon is delicious. Wrapping a 14-episode series using Kevin Bacon? Inspired. So this is from B-R-O-R, which I would say like B-Roar?
Be right out, Roger.
Be right out, Roger. I was thinking about this, and I think, because I've had misgivings about the season. I feel like there wasn't enough bacon in the bacon wrap season. I voiced this to you a number of times so far.
Mm-hmm.
But we're almost through, and I'm actually feeling pretty good about this. Because, of course, we've been able to work some bacon conversation into most of these episodes.
Yes.
Right?
When we remember.
So how do you feel this season's going?
I think it's exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, I do too, and I think we're about to bring it to a crashing halt.
Oh, for sure.
This may be the worst podcast we've ever recorded.
We have our work cut out for us. Let's just put it this way. I mean, we warn the viewers and listeners in advance. I don't know where this is going to go. If we pull this off to make it even slightly entertaining, then we've outdone ourselves.
So I think you're right in that we kind of, like, worked ourselves into a corner, and then the question is, can we punch our way out?
Yes, and I'm looking forward to seeing how we. Maybe we just flew a little too close to the sun.
Mm-hmm. This was your choice, Memoirs of the Invisible Man, of an Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. He's not even the Invisible Man. He's just your garden variety Invisible Man.
Yeah, we assume.
And this was your choice. So I'm going to let you, I will let you start. What are your, how would you like to start discussing this thing?
Can we talk about something else?
No, Steve, we cannot.
Cool. This movie, it was a very specific campaign, I think, through Entertainment Tonight, and I think there may have even been like an MTV, like, behind the scenes special thing on it or whatever, but this was really being touted, I think, for the effects.
What was the year of this?
92.
So 92, and this is about the same time we're getting Jurassic Park. You know, Jurassic Park is a couple years later, but this is at the same time that Jurassic Park is probably being filmed.
So 92, let's see what we've got.
So to make a claim about a special effects is pretty bold.
Well, considering right now your special effects movies in 92 that you're probably doing any comparisons to, would be what, like Lawnmower Man or...
Well, I mean, it's not like I enjoyed the special effects in Ghostbusters. It's just that I wasn't wowed by them. Like, how did they do that? It was just like, boy, that was fun. And because that movie was a fun movie, I wasn't hung up on the special effects, but I would not call those special effects like jaw dropping.
Well, part of the thing is that I don't think we really had an Invisible Man movie, right? Like, so let's back up a little bit. So, you know, kind of in your classic movies. I would assume this, I don't know if it falls in the universal monster horror category, but, you know, you've got the imagery of the Invisible Man is something I think we grew up with, right? Have you ever seen the Invisible Man, the black and white, you know?
I'd never seen it, but I do remember it was a constant question on the playground. Would you rather fly or be invisible?
Sure. So invisibility is certainly part of, you know, it's part of our, like, it's part of our culture, right? The idea of being invisible. And
it's almost an archetype of a superpower, right?
Right. Right. So, and the thing is that, but the idea is, okay, so what is your, is invisibility, is, if the invisibility is a superpower, you can turn yourself invisible. Right. But if you're invisible because of some other situation where that you just lack visibility, like, what does that mean? You know, like, it's
It's more of a curse in the same way that, you know, being a werewolf is a curse or being a vampire can be a curse, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a certain loneliness to it, right? So when we're kids on the playground talking about, like, would you like to be invisible? What you're saying is, would you like to go and see a girl shower? Like, that's it. I mean, there's no other.
Would you like to be an extra in Porky's?
Would you rather be a superhero or a degenerate? That's what we're asking. And the hard part, I think nothing expresses what it means to be a middle schooler is that you can't quite decide between those two options.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So you get this film, right? And it's I have to imagine fairly large budget. I was interested because I kept seeing things about the effects and the making of and all of that stuff, right? And so I was kind of interested in the idea of an invisible man. Now at this point, I feel like the shine is off of Chevy Chase.
You're in high school at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Continue.
So I feel like, so this is a movie where Chevy Chase is trying to sort of break from just a straight, like, slapsticky comedy, right? And I think this script went through some rewrites so that he could show his acting chops, such as they are.
I've got an excerpt from William Goldman's book that I'm going to read a little bit later, but continue.
Okay. So I think there's this, I mean, you've already got this, like, I mean, Chevy Chase at this point is, he's a comic actor. The year before he did Nothing But Trouble, you know, he's, Christmas Vacation a couple years before that, Fletch.
He's done Caddyshack, Spies Like Us.
Sunny Farm, Couch Trip, Three Amigos. It's not like, and, you know, and so Modern Problems is another one from, like, 81 where, like, you know, he gets kind of cursed with, like, telekinesis or
it
whatever.
It should be said that the vacation films were pretty well celebrated and very big money makers.
Right. So he's a pretty big, I mean, Nothing But Trouble was a huge flop. It was just a complete misfire. But, like, he's still writing, and Caddyshack 2 a few years before that. So, I mean, he's definitely got some stinkers. But he's at this point considered a legit leading comic actor, right? So when you see a Memoirs of the Invisible Man, I think your first thought is, all right, so this is going to be an Invisible Man movie, but it's going to be funny. Like, and again, I point to, like, Modern Problems as sort of this kind of, maybe, you know, sort of precursor for this sort of idea. You know, we're going to get some slapsticky stuff. He'll get the girl in the end, but he'll probably do some, like, kind of like, he'll probably do some rakish things as an invisible man before he comes to, like, maybe there's a point where he learns to use it for good, you know, but kind of thinking those lines, right? And what they decided to do instead was make a movie where Chevy Chase plays somebody who is neither funny nor interesting. And then he gets cursed with invisibility and nobody cares.
And so what you're telling me is that
that's the
this
movie.
This movie is the best autobiography of Chevy Chase's real life.
Yeah, right.
He's neither interesting or funny, and eventually he will become invisible to all of us.
Right. So it's really, it's kind of, maybe this is the peak hubris or whatever, because after this, I mean, he's doing nothing but goofball stuff again. It's like this was a career defining moment in a career already defined, right?
Yeah.
there's a lot of things that are in this movie, like, it's made like a movie.
Yeah.
It is an actual film.
So let's talk about that. Is it?
Well, there is clearly a camera involved, because otherwise we wouldn't see the stuff. So I feel like that's a pretty necessary uh-huh. ingredient for a movie. Cameras, actors, there's people you know that are most likely being paid for saying words and pretending to be somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Again, very important aspect of a movie. There's credits.
So let me tell you
that
this.
Matters.
Let me just frame this in a way that is not negative. All right.
I think I've been neither negative nor positive, which is, I think, the epitome of what this movie is.
Okay. I disagree. But let me try to frame this in a way that's not negative. I used to watch The Twilight Zone, sort of the second iteration. The Twilight Zone that was in color. The Twilight gotcha. Zone that George R.R. Martin wrote for a few episodes. Did you ever watch this? This I think it was a mid-80s or late-80s Twilight Zone reboot.
Yeah, I watched the original and I watched this.
I always quite liked them, and they were pretty short. They were like little short stories, something amazing or sci-fi-y or horrific would happen. And it would just kind of end. Like, you would see, like, something that happened, you would see a few of the outcomes of the outlandish thing happen, and then it would just end. If you were to show me the first 30 minutes of this movie as a Twilight Zone episode...
You'd be excited that it would just end?
No, I mean, well, of course, sure. But I would think that was the best episode of the Twilight Zone I've ever seen. If you think of this as sort of like a schlocky sci-fi episode, and just give me the first 30 minutes, I think it works pretty well as sort of a television, suitable for television, Twilight Zone. As a movie, it is a train wreck. But I think I might have enjoyed this movie in 92.
I didn't.
Did you see it in 92?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Because you had read about it, and that now you're going to go to the theater to see it because you want to see the
old movie. I don't know if I saw it in the theater. I don't believe I saw it in the theater.
All right.
But it was definitely one of these ones where I'm just watching this then and especially now going, what's the point of any of this? You know what I mean? It's like they make it like, so there are elements of this movie that are not awful. There are elements of this movie that are actually like, oh, that's kind of an interesting take on this concept, but it's, the movie has zero interest in, like, it has no interest in exploring invisibility.
Okay. I'll tell you,
he's just invisible.
Well, let me retort.
He's just an invisible man. That's it.
Yeah, but we get
that is it.
But we get to see him in bronze face, at least.
That's true. I mean, it's certainly... Well, that... And so, okay, great. I'm glad you brought up the problematic now and fine in 92 bronze face moment.
Not just fine in 92. They thought, this is a good idea.
But an interesting move that they don't, you know, play it up. It's really just a disguise to look like you have a cab.
It does have a little bit of a Fletch vibe in that, you know, he's always wearing disguises in Fletch. And I will say, before he does the bronze face, we do get to see him in pink face as well.
That's true. That is true. But see, that's the thing. It's like, so the movie, like, we're almost done with the movie when they decide, like, okay, well, let's go with the effects, right? Let's do the painting of his face, giving him the teeth and all that stuff. And it's like, that was, you could have done that earlier and made this movie even just a little bit interesting.
I mean, we're calling this the effects that he wore makeup? Like, that, to me, that's the least impressive part of the movie in terms of
when he wipes his face and he's got nothing but like then just teeth are floating. You know, I mean, it's like the this idea that like
so the best effects are put in service to the awkward date where he wipes his mouth when he shouldn't have.
Well, but here's the thing. That's a much more interesting movie.
Set piece.
That's a much more interesting movie is watching the guy try to just survive as an invisible man. Explore what it means to now, like, you have this thing which can be a power, but at the same time, it's a curse. Explore that. Instead, what you have is you have this absurd, there's the most villainous agents working for, I guess, the CIA. I don't know what they work for. And
they bully the CIA.
They bully the CIA. They want to capture this guy and coerce him to be a spy. Or sell him to the Russians.
Sell him to the Russians. Like, this guy's the perfect spy. Your patriotic duty is to sell him to our Cold War enemy.
Keep in mind that the grand plan here is that he can be the ultimate agent. And in order to convince him to be the ultimate agent, all they try to do is kill him. I mean, if you want this guy on your side, make the movie about trying to convince that you're going to help him instead of being this cartoonish everyone must die villain who is like, well, okay, if you get him, then what are you going to do? Like, they don't even want to experiment on him. They want to turn him into a spy. But like, you can't just turn a person into a spy if they don't want to be. Like, that is such a flawed thing. And the other part of it is that Chevy Chase's character is, it'd be one thing if he was just flat out unlikable. I mean, he's not likable, but like, he's not like
at one point he's running away and he busts through a door and knocks the sweet old lady from Happy Gilmore onto the floor unconscious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
This is not your hero. Can we talk about whether or not we are rooting for him to get together with Daryl Hannah?
I'm rooting for Sam Neill a lot.
I'm looking at Daryl Hannah and I'm thinking, you are in danger. Do not be in the same room with this man. Run away as fast as you can.
And you're talking before he's invisible?
Before he's invisible. That's right.
Yeah.
When he walks into the bar and he sees her.
Yeah, he's so gross.
And undresses her with his eyes.
He's so gross.
Let me just put it this way. If you wanted someone to have the face of a sex offender and pull that off perfectly, Chevy Chase is your man. I was worried for Daryl Hannah at every moment they were in the same room together.
I'm so glad you brought this up because I think this is an interesting turn in it. If you look at, so we talk about, and I like this. We're gonna experience the bacon wrap concept in its fullest. Mm-hmm. Maybe this episode is actually really necessary for what we're trying.
Well, and I will say this: we'll just front load this. Hey, Steve, what bacon character would you insert into this movie?
Well, obviously Hollow Man, because obviously maybe he'll kill Chevy Chase.
It's obviously Hollow Man. Okay, continue.
So we talked about with Adam Sandler and we talked about Punch Drunk Love and how it kind of feels like PTA's interpretation of what an Adam Sandler movie is, right?
Yeah.
You have this inexplicably weird individual who is, you know, got some, you know, he's instable.
He's emotionally immature and volatile.
Emotionally stunted and volatile and but somehow gets the girl and might
deep,
have a heart
deep
of gold.
Down yeah he deep down he's just a big sweetheart,
right? So yeah, so that's kind of like that's PTA's version. This is interesting because you look at Chevy Chase, I want to do something dramatic, I want to be, you know, more of a leading man, kind of a role that isn't just for comic relief or slapstick. And so if you shed all those other things, you go, oh, this guy's a creep.
Yeah.
And then if you look back and you're like, oh yeah, he was a creep in Fletch. Oh, he's a creep in everything. But when he's comically creepy, you forgive it because he's going to fall downstairs or something. But when he's not that, you go, oh, you might be a problem.
It's almost like he's the class clown. you know, he's sort of the class clown to his boss. That's fine.
Well, but that's the thing. In another movie, he's like kind of bumbling, but kind of likable. He might, you know, but in this case, he's just like, you're just kind of a bad employee and you're obviously very wealthy too. Like, what am I rooting for here?
Yeah.
You're kind of like the worst, like just rich white dude.
I think that that was funny in the 80s, though. I think that there was a lot of comedy. There's a reason why Fletch was really successful. Like, I don't know if last time you've seen Spies Like Us, but it's a lot of that.
Yeah, for sure.
He's definitely creepy, but, you know, he's sort of like the avatar for all of the guys that wish that they could get away with all the stuff that Chevy Chase does. It's just a kind of a brand of humor that hasn't survived.
Right. But the thing is that this movie doesn't do that humorously.
Yeah.
The movie says, well, what if we strip that character of the humor and what do you have? You go, ew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so like immediately our first introduction to him, I'm like, ew. Like, cause there's nothing like he's going so far out of his way to not be funny.
He's not
that you realize, oh, your charm was just there. Your charm was only that little veneer of comedy. Your charm is like the makeup that Daryl Hannah puts on your face. It's like it is just so easily washed off, and then we don't want to see you anymore.
I think there's also a Daryl Hannah problem. I think she works as a mermaid because, like, she's from the sea. She doesn't know how the world works. She's half fish. She's half fish and she's kind of klutzy. I think she's fine in that kind of role. I don't know if, and I'll, you know, I guess I love her in Kill Bill Volume 2. I don't know if there's a lot in between that I really love Daryl Hannah in.
Right.
What are your feelings about Daryl Hannah?
Typically, I was never really a fan of her acting. I never got it. You know, like I always felt like every Daryl Hannah movie was made worse because she was in it. You know what I mean? Like, so it's one of those things where when I see her in Kill Bill Volume 2 and I enjoy it, it very much kind of felt like, you know, when you saw Travolta in Pulp Fiction, like, whoa, we're getting something here, you know.
Well, but she's playing against type, and that's part of the fun there. But I do think that there's something about, okay, so she's not great, but because Chevy Chase is horrible, I think a better actor makes this movie worse. Like, I'm thinking, like, I like Rene Russo in a lot of movies from the 90s. I think she's great. I think she does. She has about the same range as Daryl Hannah. But for whatever reason, I just like her more. But I think if you put her in this movie, now you're thinking, I don't believe that she's falling for him.
No.
And I think I almost think you need a Daryl Hannah to think, well, she's the kind of person that might fall for her.
Well, the thing is, they create her as this, like, she makes these documentaries, right?
Like, so she's, right. She's a documentarian.
She's supposed to be, like, intellectual. She's supposed to be talented. She's supposed to be not what she, I mean, like, there's nothing about what they, this is a classic problem in comedy movies, movies in general, but comedy movies especially, where you create the guise of a powerful woman as sort of a foil to maybe the wackier lead, and then they just fall for him inexplicably, and that's kind of like, again, there's elements of like her character that would make sense in a wackier movie somehow, because then you kind of almost forgive that trope.
Sure.
But when you take the whack out of it and you try to make it like a little bit more serious at times, then you expose these tropes as being completely ridiculous. Uh-huh. Like there's no reason outside of the fact that he's gotten money, that that any woman would be interested in this guy. He is so off-putting. Uh-huh. And off-putting in a way that's like, I don't even need you to tell me why. I'll figure it out. Like, okay. I bet you I'll guess why he's gross.
All right. I think I know why the, I think I know where this went wrong. So I was about halfway through the movie and Sarah's in the other room so she can hear it. And she kind of calls from the other room and she says, is this a drama or a comedy?
Mm-hmm. The answer is nope.
And I just was silent for a little bit. And she said, you can't tell? Uh-oh.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think it's trying to be a drama because it's not funny, but I don't even think it's trying to be funny.
Yeah, for soup or broth, you know, chicken, beef, vegetable. Well, which is clearest? Clearest. Which is most transparent? I'm looking for clear foods here. No coloring, easy to digest. My doctor says I gotta eat clear foods. I'm all gas.
So this brings me to William Goldman. So as you know, I'm a big fan of William Goldman. I love his movies. I've read The Princess Bride. I've read Adventures in Screenplay. But until this week, I had not read the sequel to Adventures in Screenplay, which is called Which Lie Did I Tell? And he opens that book by talking about all about this movie. And I'm going to read just about a 5-minute excerpt of this book. So I pre-recorded myself reading this. In my experience, you work with a director. Stars come later. And though they can be helpful, usually they are concerned not with the story, but rather their part in it, and how they can be made even more adorable. Often, my main chore on the first draft is to nail a director. Here, Reitman was involved with the initial go-around, so I met him. Reitman had talked with Chase. Together they decided what the movie should be. I liked Reitman from the very beginning. A couple of interesting things about him. For a comedy figure, he was never remotely funny. For a superstar director, there was a total absence of bullshit. Later, when he brought me on to Dr. Twins, there was no secrecy. He had the other writers there when I was there, in the same room. When we started, we were both well aware that Memoirs of an Invisible Man was not the Battleship Potemkin. But Reitman was on the project for a good reason. He felt absolutely confident that he was on track of another Ghostbusters, a special effects-filled comedy action flick. The plot of the novel. All you need to know is that it's about a guy who accidentally gets caught in a lab explosion and is rendered invisible, and has ensuing adventures. We talked for a couple days, then I went off and did the first draft. Sent it to Reitman and Chase. It was an okay first draft, meaning that lots of work needed to be done, but at least a version of the story was there. Reitman felt it was a good start, called me out from New York to talk about draft 2. Before that happened, I spent a few minutes with Chase. I liked him too. He wasn't just tall, he was nice and bright and funny. He too was supportive enough about the first draft, knowing that it was just that, the beginning of something. He clearly saw potential for the project. And as I was leaving, he casually mentioned that he hoped this time through we could be a little bit more forthcoming in what interested him in the material, and which he had talked to Ivan about, namely, an investigation of the loneliness of invisibility. Nice phrase, that. Interesting rhythm. But all kinds of swell echoes. Want to know how those words sounded to my ears? Like this. Argh! Why? Because my director wanted to do a funny farce with special effects, and my star wanted to do a serious, sad drama. I went running to my new agents. Listen to me, I told them. There's going to be a train wreck, and I'm in the middle. Here's what they said. Bill, you've been away a while. Things are a little different now. Ivan is represented by us. Chevy's represented by us. This is what CAA specializes in. It is called a package. And there will be no train wreck. Just write the script, and it will all sort itself out. I met with Ivan. Chevy's kind of interested in investigating the loneliness of invisibility, I told him. His reply? Totally unruffled, calm. Let me handle Chevy. Okay, draft 3. Talk with Ivan. Hopefully make things better. Talk about Chevy with the loneliness of invisibility. Back to New York to write and write and write. In truth, Whenever there was a chance to toss a little loneliness into the flick, I did so. And you want to know why? Because Chevy had a valid point. How could you deal with this material without discussing the awful reality of what it would be like if no one could see you? And if you were, I guess, the ultimate freak on earth. But this had to be considered too. Olivier was not playing the lead. Young Brando was not playing the lead. Or Cagney. My truth was this. I had no problem investigating the loneliness of invisibility. I just didn't want to investigate it with Chevy Chase. Bright as Chase was, he had not gotten famous for playing drunks or scientists or death row convicts. He had become so playing a goof who had trouble with stairs. Draft 3 made its way to both powers. Ivan wanted to go into production. Chevy stood his ground. I made my standard run at my agents. They smiled and chortled and reassured, but I could see in their eyes I was not the loony of a few months before. Ivan went to the brothers Warner. Your pick, he told them, knowing that they had to pick him. Me or Chevy. They picked Chevy. I think I quit first, but I don't really remember. It was probably a dead heat. Half a dozen years later, Chevy came out in the flick. My name is mentioned among the writers. I have no idea if it should have been, since I never saw the movie.
So that's Goldman. This is supposed to be an Ivan Reitman film. In the hands of Ivan Reitman, this might have been the film that they had pumped up in all of the magazines you were reading.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
And I trust Reitman. Like, I trust Reitman. If he thinks he's got another Ghostbusters on his hands, I think he could have pulled it off. I just think that Chevy Chase was not only the worst person for the job, he made it all about him and maybe made it a metaphor for the fact that he wasn't on top anymore and felt invisible.
Quite possibly. And if that's the case, okay, you did it. You showed us why you're not on top anymore and what that must feel like.
And, but that's the reason why Sarah asked me, is this a comedy or a drama? And it's because from the very start, there was a conflict. Is this a comedy or a drama?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I wonder if I would be interested in one or the other, right?
Right. I think in my notes, take a look here. I said, it's not funny enough to be a comedy. Mm-hmm. It's not dramatic enough to be a drama. Mm-hmm. It's not interesting enough to be science fiction. It's the worst of all movies. Because to me, this is the worst kind of movie, uh-huh. Right? Because a bad movie that is bad, but entertaining is still at its core entertaining.
Uh-huh.
We've seen some misfires. I mean, I was like, man, I kind of want to watch Hero at Large after this. So I owe it an apology. Teen Wolf 2 is better than Memoirs of an Invisible
Man. Because
and I think Teen Wolf 2 is sin.
At least Teen Wolf 2 knows what it is, you know?
Right. I mean, there's no question about it, right? Like, Jason Bateman didn't say, okay, that's fine, but I want to talk about the loneliness of trying to be a werewolf and on a boxing scholarship when you find out that you only got it because your cousin was good at basketball.
I love it.
Like, that's – at least that's – I mean, like, there's a – because – so it does beg the question, is there an interesting Invisible Man story to be told? Because, I mean, you have Hollow Man that comes out later, and it's more of a horror movie, right? Never seen it, but I hear it's kind of off-putting. And that could just be with the plot, but still – It's hard when you do an Invisible Man movie because your lead actor is invisible. that's going to be a challenge, right?
I will. I will say this for this movie. For an Invisible Man, we see Chevy Chase a lot in this movie.
Mm, yeah, we do for sure.
You know,
I think it's an interesting choice to like make it so that the clothes that he was in were invisible. So that way he's not just naked all the time. And
yeah.
But they
do a naked scene, but it's not, doesn't happen too much. Right.
Right. I don't know why he's covering himself. I guess it's just impulse, but whatever. I mean, I'm glad, but they so when you do that and you go, okay, well, the clothes also get, you know, the molecular structure of the clothes are also part of that. You then, that's when you can introduce the notion of, you know, well, if anything that you enters your body, you can see. I would have liked to have seen more like urine and poop running around.
I was wondering that. I was like, is this, come on.
Because just because it's clear.
I should be looking at excrement like the entire right. time, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's just no way. I mean, there's just no, you're always got something, right? I mean, I don't know. So like, there's that aspect of it. I did like the line, you know, it's very hard to sleep when you can see through your eyelids. Thought that was interesting. You know, like, so there's elements of like where they're, again, where they're exploring this invisibility. But here's the thing is you can also do that in a comedy. You can do that. You could for sure pull that off in a funny way that also has like moments of poignancy, but like it has no idea what it wants to do, right? Like, we want him to be invisible and that should be enough.
Okay, let me suggest this. I want to recast Chevy Chase. I want to recast two different versions of the movie. If this movie is a serious movie, who do you replace Chevy Chase with?
If it's serious. And we're keeping it at Carpenter?
Yeah.
Ooh. So 92.
Let's Jack?
See. So, you know, a lot of times I thought, I was thinking Harrison Ford.
Interesting. Okay. If it's a comedy, I think it should be Eddie Murphy.
Ooh. Yeah, because he's in 92, I think he's just starting to make his sort of return. That could be really good.
So that would be my suggestion. So I was thinking,
what about, like, what about a Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton's the perfect for either one.
Right? I feel like he could pull off both.
I think you're right. I think he'd be the perfect one for either side. I think for you want it to be comedic, right? I think the perfect solution to this is let William Goldman write his film, take Chevy Chase's influence out of it, let Ivan Reitman direct it, and have Michael Keaton star.
Let me read something to you. This is John Carpenter in an interview talking about Memoirs of an Invisible Man. Chevy Chase, Sam Neill, who I love and have a long time friendship with, and Warner Brothers. I worked for them and it was pleasant, Carpenter told Variety before adding, no, it wasn't pleasant at all. I'm lying to you. It was a horror show. I really wanted to quit the business after that movie. Carpenter continued, God, I don't want to talk about why, but let's just say there were personalities on that film. He shall not be named. Who needs to be killed? No, no, no. That's terrible. He needs to be set on fire. No, no, no. Anyway, it's all fine. I survived it.
So I think he's talking about Chase, right? I think we
has to, because he says later, he says, right? he talks about working with Neil and he says he's a terrific actor. And
right. It was Daryl Hannah. He just it was hates
Stephen Tobolowsky.
Stephen Tobolowsky.
Come on.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Well, and the movie kind of tells on itself, and it tells on itself in a way that is trying to make a point, but it actually it reveals the flaw of the movie. When Sam Neill's character is talking about, hey, here's a guy who's got no friends, he's got no family. They're all the irony of this man becoming invisible is that he was already invisible to begin with. It's like, that's the problem.
Well, I think it tells on itself when the so-called friends are chatting in the living room. And they start talking about him as if he's not there, saying he's a narcissist.
Right. Yeah.
And I was thinking,
he is.
That, well, of course he is. We all know that already, and that's why we don't like him.
Right. And they're not, you're not, and never changes. And I mean, he doesn't like, what does he do? He basically, you know, even though he feigns that he doesn't want to get her in trouble, he's totally fine with bringing Daryl Hannah along for what could be her ultimate peril.
He's totally fine standing over Daryl Hannah as she sleeps.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, she's not wearing anything.
Is there a trope, a cliche, or a device that you liked in this movie?
I like tranquilizer darts.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I did have a kind of a problem with the tranquilizer dart. It doesn't seem to knock you out for very long.
Or right away.
In a movie where, like, you can get knocked out just by, like, a slight conk on the head.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, really a slight conk on the head. It will knock you out for a long time. The tranquilizer dart hits him. He falls into the river, or into the bay, or is the, I don't know what, where that is. He falls into the river. He should just die, right? I mean, he's just going to die. Yeah,
you mean being unconscious in the water?
Yes, that's right. And then he like floats down the river and says, when I came to, I upchucked a lot of water.
Yeah, gallons of seawater.
So they would have been better, like just kind of like barely elbowing him in the head, because he would have stayed out a lot longer than
I think maybe they just forgot to shake the darts before they loaded them. It settles. The tranquilizer settles, so you only get it so much on the tip.
I like blast doors in a lab.
Oh, yeah.
I like it, you know, when, you know, it was clearly a malfunction, you know? It was sort of like a Rube Goldberg problem.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the entire building explodes into invisibility. Mm-hmm. But boy, there, those blast doors, those were part of the effects. Now, I do have a question about those, though. Why leave the hallway door open? Like you're clearly working on some pretty advanced technology in there. There's a public lecture going on right down the hall. Maybe close the door.
Right.
I mean, the door is not hard to close. It's a button. You press a button.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the scientists is claustrophobic.
There's just not a lot of good crossbreeze.
What did you think about, I mean, for a movie that's supposed to have special effects, what did you think about the lab fire?
That was pretty wild. The lab. Yeah. Well, so I got to go back to the effects. Like, so, like watching him run on the beach, like that was a movie that I liked. I'm like, just have him be invisible. You know what I mean?
It was almost like every now and again they were like, yeah, but it's Chevy Chase. You know, can't we try to make it funny? But then they would forget in the next scene.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what if the movie was about a guy who was invisible like this and he keeps getting tested and they're like, the whole thing is, can he get his visibility back? And so he's like constantly going back for tests and doing different things and trying different regimens and trying to make, and then the movie is him just getting used to the fact, well, I guess this is what I am now. I'm invisible. How do I, you know, maybe there's good I can make out of it. You know what I mean? And like almost Groundhog Day to a degree, right? Like this is not going to go away. So now I have to figure out what it means to be this.
Or Teen Wolf. Where he's like, okay, I'm invisible, but now I'm famous invisible and everyone likes me. And do they really like me or do they just like me because I'm a celebrity? I mean, there's a lot of other things that you could do.
Well, and you can still do that in the funny way. Like, and that's the thing is like again, we're already promoting our Groundhog Day podcast that's coming up. But like, that's kind of the point, right? You took a guy, and we'll talk about how effective it is when we do our review. But like, that's your concept, right? I mean, Groundhog Day to some degree feels like what this movie could have been in many ways, right? Like this, you chart a path of maybe somebody who's who's not an invisible person in real life, but is a visible person in real life, becomes invisible. And then that's now their new reality. Or they can use their invisibility to become visible the other way, right? Like they are someone who's just sort of in the shadows, but now that they're invisible, hey, I could rob a bank if I wanted to. I could do this. I could be a lech. I could do all these things, but then maybe that only, you know, lasts so long. And now I could be a celebrity, but oh, geez, but to what end? And how do I just deal with that fact that I'm invisible? Will I find love if I'm invisible? Like all those types of things can be played up for jokes. They can be played up for drama. They can be even just a little bit interesting would be a nice change of pace.
So Groundhog's Day comes next because of Stephen Tobolowsky. Do you think he brought a lot to this film?
Yeah, that was because again, it's like I've never seen Tobolowsky try to do like the more dramatic.
Tobolowsky is the CIA's ineffectual vice principal.
Exactly. Hey, you can't go killing people.
Steve, is there a tweak you would have made to this movie to improve it?
I think that's all we've talked about.
You can only make one tweak.
I guess you just can it.
So Goldman says that Reitman goes to Warner Brothers and says, me or Chase? And they choose Chase. And I think they made the wrong decision. So totally. If they had gone the other direction, you would have kept William Goldman on. William Goldman writing for a Stephen Reitman film. You've still got a big budget. You add Michael Keaton instead, you could get an entirely different movie.
Totally.
So that's my tweak.
Yeah.
Steve, is this movie better, worse, or on par with a Ron Howard film?
Ron Howard, my gut says -7.
I was going to say Ron Howard -20.
Okay. That's fair.
Because, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right, because Ron Howard would probably make nice with Chevy Chase. He's just, his reputation is that he just gets along with everybody. And so Ron Howard.
And he might have been able to convince him to be, can we just maybe, let's do a little more with the jacket. Just see how it works. Let's see how it feels.
So I don't, maybe Ron Howard doesn't help this as much as I had thought. All right, I'm going to go with you. We'll say 7. Steve, is there a half a battle, one de Grand moment in this film?
Don't make out with Chevy Chase.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.